Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show. It is an absolute must that you dose yourself on Vinny Eastwood Show on a daily basis, preferably, but also just on a kind of weekly, you know? Because sometimes you'll be sitting there and you'll be watching the news for quite a long period of time, and you'll be very stressed out about it. Not necessarily because the stuff is so scary per se, it's more the fact that it's lies and it makes you incredibly angry, which causes a lot of stress. You know, that's how that works, isn't it? I have this real great aversion to any kind of television now. Like I spent the weekend with my parents-in-law, and for the first time in like over a year or something, just watching television. And yeah, I was reminded of what Stephen Hughes said, a comedian. He said, "I don't watch television. Television to me, no, not a good idea. For two reasons. I'm intelligent, and I've got a temper." It's just when the advertising came on, it was almost as if there was some kind of despicable scumbag with a hammer and chisel, literally just nailing at my temple. Kind of like almost stabbing with a sharp shard of glass into my pineal gland or something. But I can't describe the excruciating pain and rage that was going through me right then. It was just to the point where actually other people noticed. They're like, "Are you okay, Vinny?" I was like, no, please mute the ads. Please mute the ads. Oh my God. You know, just almost on that verge of demon possession when the rejection of the programming gets so strong that, oh God, that stuff is annoying. And I understand now, and I appreciate the fact that I gave it up. Oh, you know, you get home and it's like, back to conspiracy stuff again. It's surprisingly less aggravating than television commercials. isn't that funny? Somebody selling you a product can actually be more annoying than the fact that there's a criminal elite that run and control and own pretty much everything. I mean, that's a real downer, but man, it doesn't all of a sudden just pop out at you and go, "Oh God, shut it up!" I mean, occasionally that happens, but not every single time there's a commercial break. You know, it's my mind rejecting the programming. You know, why do you think they call it television programming? Because it's there to program you. I was getting into this question about alternative media, what it actually means. And I believe there's a better term for it, independent media. Because ultimately, we don't want to be dependent on other people for our news stories. We don't want to be dependent on others to provide us with the context of our content, you know? And I see the so-called alternative media, which are basically either just left-wingers or right-wingers who are both freaking idiots who don't realise that they're both wrong and that there's a greater puppet master that controls both of the respective parties and ideologies that they appear to be supporting, which are being undermined in every fucking way. That's the problem when you look too deep into things, isn't it? It becomes a little bit more aggravating. Because you realise, not only is it not true, but you can't convince people, even though you've got the evidence, that it's not true. That's the frustrating part. The finding out that it's not true is the depressing part. Because you get disillusioned. The definition of which, I really like the word definition of disillusion. Because it's about learning something different about a topic or a subject that you thought previously was really good. And you didn't think there was anything bad about it. And then all of a sudden, here comes the information, bro. That's an unfortunate one, isn't it? Information comes to you and just destroys your previously held beliefs. That's the problem with it. And that's why people reject it outright without looking at it. Why would they want to look at it? They built their entire personality up on lies. And now you're trying to cut out the pillars like you're going to get some kind of controlled demolition. You know? This isn't 9/11, bro. Magical stuff like that doesn't just happen. This is just the frustrating, constant anguish that all people who believe that such a thing as conspiracy exists endure. On the reg. It's a painful, annoying, frustrating, dull existence when you're not involved in the movement. I know. I used to do it. I used to have money and stuff, you know, and a job and things that I thought were more important than devoting yourself to the truth and the other people who give their blood, sweat, and tears to uncover it. My perceptions got realigned conveniently. And the reason it got realigned is because the system screwed me. And isn't that really the immutable truth? Until the system screws you, you're not really prepared to completely abandon it and just go, you know what? No, I don't care where my money source is. I don't want to work for the other people ever again. I can't do it. It's not that I won't do it. It's that I can't physically do it. That kind of drive, it's a really powerful thing. People don't realize their power. And it's because you've been told your entire life that you're not really that powerful. But you are. And you're a great threat. Not necessarily because you're doing anything particularly important. And when I say you're a great threat, it's not like somebody's going to just whiff out, you know, a sniper rifle or something like that as soon as you get on talk radio and just pop you. Oh my God, he was going to say something too important. There's a whole range of factors that are involved here. And I see a lot of people doing this. They've always got a whole lot of ideas, but they don't put any of them into action. You know, some people, they come up with an idea. And they go, oh, that's a good idea. And then they come up with another idea. And they go, oh, that's a good idea. I come up with an idea, do it, and then go on to the next one. But after some people get their initial idea, if they actually do get something off the ground, they then sit there and worry about it and try to perfect it, or maybe, like, remove it off of YouTube or something like that. It's like, why, bro? You're making progress. You're not doing nothing. I mean, we put on a little gathering at a bar last night called Truth or Dare 2 to have a few musos and poets and activists and just general conspiracy people coming in and having a go on the mic and having a laugh. And the vibe was really, really quite awesome. And I noticed and remembered a pattern. Now, I've been to a number of truth or gig type events, all right? I'm not talking about, like, health conferences or things that are basically at least a little bit mainstream so that you get relatively conservative people turning up and greater numbers or anything. But I'm talking about just things that are really almost exclusively for us, you know, like a David Icke conference or something of that nature, or a Zeitgeist Movement screening, both of which I got into for free because I helped the organizers and all of that kind of stuff, and I just waltzed right in, and it's just like, I don't need no ticket, I don't need no money, I'm Mr. News, baby. You know, and we have just a great time together, you know, this vibe. Everybody's just real cool, man. Real cool. And if they weren't, they wouldn't be there. Because when you do talk about conspiracy, people who are dicks will automatically reveal themselves to you, and they will automatically reject anything that you have to offer. So you get a natural indicator and a natural protective blanket simultaneously. All right? Like Billy Connolly, for example, he has a pair of pants that have purple lavender on them. And he says they're his dick detector pants or something of that nature. Because when he goes to a party with people he doesn't know, there'll always be some dick who comes up and goes, "Oh, those are really nice pants, aren't they?" And he goes, "Ah, don't want to talk to you for the whole night." You know? Helen refines the process. Because at all times, and we must admit this to ourselves, we're surrounded by either some form of dick or some kind of dickish apparatus. You know what I'm saying? Even been in like office jobs and things like that. Half the office are people that you would never hang out with if you had the choice, you know? Not to say that they're bad people or anything, you just don't really get along, you don't gel with them, you don't really have similar interests or anything like that. I mean, you're not enemies by any stretch, but there's no real connection there. And that's what I've felt like almost my entire life. You know, I've been able to make friends and stuff everywhere that I go, but very few that I've actually been able to have a real connection with. Because I'm kind of like, I'm very selfish, but I'm also very selfless simultaneously to balance out the narcissism. So not only do I get good friends now, but I'm also a very good friend to them. Because you have to be. There's an old saying, if you want good friends, be one. Just be a good friend, and you will suddenly find out that you've got some. And what the problem is with socializing when you've got a head full of conspiracy and you go to sleep watching documentaries and things like that about scumbaggery is that you can't relate to anybody in your circles anymore. Now, what I did with those circles is I just cast them off. I have no people that I call my close friends that I see regularly and hang out with and everything that I met in school, at work, or at university. Not one. You know? Just not in touch with them, really. Because they're just basically not as awakened or something. I don't know what the measuring stick is. Maybe it's just distance. But I found that if people aren't willing to support what I'm doing, encourage me or enlighten me, tell me something I don't know, I lose interest because there's billions of people on this planet. Billions! We don't even grasp what a billion people is. How many people do you know? You probably loosely know about 1,000. You could probably recite maybe 20, 30 off the top of your head in a pinch. 100 if you had a little bit of time to think about it, and then you start to really go into it. And dude, you've got family connections everywhere. You got friendships and things like that. It's kind of like a, not like an infection, but you have a ripple effect in your social circles, right? And I think that what needs to be done, or at least one thing out of many millions of things that need to be done a little bit more often in general by people, and I don't like telling anybody what to do, but this thing that I'm trialing here, thanks to Iron Bar on K Road in the corner of Queen Street, the events for conspiracy people just to come to a bar, have a few drinks, and hang out and chat with each other. I saw really cool stuff, like stuff that I've not seen since the most well-organized dance parties full of the coolest and nicest and friendliest people, you know, who are very interesting. And that was like maybe 6 years ago since I've kind of felt that sort of environment where everybody's really, really on the same wavelength. There were like maybe, I don't know, weren't too many of us there, 20 tops. But there was nobody sitting by themselves. You know, it was like groups of people who were circling and rotating and sitting in the outdoor areas, having a ciggy, having a chat, having a laugh, and everybody was talking to everybody throughout the night. And even when the bar closed at like 11 o'clock, well, there was an alcove area down the back where we sat around and played guitars and clapped and sang and stuff and talked some more and said a few things. I mean, dude, the vibe was incredible. I had Raven come up to me, she's a poet, activist, and she said to me, she left her handbag out, okay, outside for like hours. Nothing was touched, nothing. All right? And nobody she's talked to has been, you know, abrasive or a dick the whole night. That's a very, very cool thing and a very rare thing for people like us to be around so many other people like us. Usually it's only one or two of us or three, but when there's a whole room full of them and you're all tuned in and switched on, it feels so amazing. It leaves a lasting impression on you. You remember it because it's that good a time. And if there were other people out there who want to replicate this idea, it's pretty simple. It requires no investment, not really that much time to organise anything if you're just doing it on the cheapo like me, is you create a Facebook event and you say, okay, I'm going to invite all the people in my area to this Facebook event. We're going to go to a bar. But that bar owner has to be a truther, is the thing. And they have to be willing to donate their premises for free for the event. All right? And you have an open mic. So you have musicians, comedians, and activists. And they all get turns on the mic. Some of them entertain you. Some of them make you laugh. And some of them tell you really, really important stuff and talk about crucial issues. So you come away feeling entertained, relieved, and together. Like in a literal sense. You feel like you're together. I think that would be part of the definition for how I'd classify it. Is last night when I was around all the people who came to the Truth or Dare gig, it felt kind of like I was whole, if you know what I mean. And that's extraordinary, especially for a group of for more or less strangers or people that you don't know terribly well. And I think that's what conspiracy brings out in people, especially those who are willing to actually come out with a gig and associate with others. Because the one part of being a conspiracy person is that there's a lot of alone time. A lot of alone time, because there's a lot of research to be done and that kind of thing. But it's sort of like if you don't stretch certain muscles or work out, those muscles start to atrophy. Your ability to socialize and get on with people also can atrophy if you spend too much time alone in front of the screen, listening to radio shows or watching documentaries and things like that. And you do need that real human contact. And that's why I find it a great tragedy that events like this don't exist until I created it. You know, and it's still only just in its infancy, and only a few people turning up. You know, what do you expect? I've got zero budget. I don't have any design team. There's no organizers or anything. I brought my own mixer in, and I've loaned it basically on permanent loan to the bar manager because it's got more inputs than the one he had. So that other musicians and things like that also use the bar can have the benefit of multiple microphones and things of that nature. So it's like we've all got things to contribute. And doesn't it sound like a thing that you'd like to go to? Doesn't it sound like a place where you want to be? Going to a bar, having a few drinks, having a laugh with other conspiracy people, and having that relief that you're not the only fucking one of us. You know? Oh, the pressure it relieves. Like, I got to bed so late, I think it was maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. Like, bar closed at 11, and we left the the park area at, like, it's not a park area, but, and we left at about 1. So, I had a pretty late night. And I got up this morning reasonably early, and I'm not feeling tired at all. I feel energized. Normally after I film something, it takes me, quite a while to get around to the footage, like a week or something. And today, just before the show, I started editing the video from the footage last night. So, yeah, something about being around other people of like mind and knowing that you can say what you think and what you know without getting ridiculed or getting into a fight or an argument or something like that. You ever notice that? You can't actually talk to people reasonably about this stuff. You know, somebody says vaccines are good and you say no, they're not. It has to turn into a fight. Because obviously they're dealing with that cognitive dissonance thing. So they think that you're dissing them. That's why it's called dissonance, bro. But you're not. Sorry, just attacking all the preconceived notions that make up your fake personality, one that you haven't actually found out for yourself. You know how I know that? Because you've still got a slave job and you're doing something that somebody else is telling you to do, not something you created yourself originally and built from scratch, your absolute self, and didn't really need anybody to tell you to do it. You just had a vision and you fulfilled it and you willed it into existence. You didn't do that. That's how I know you're not really awakened. Knowledge has no value unless you apply it. Let's say, for example, I know that vitamin C is incredibly good for me, but I don't take it. Knowledge has no value. It's the application of that knowledge, only the application of that knowledge, that gives it value, because that's what brings knowledge into tangible existence. That's where it has an effect. Knowing how to perform a quintuple bypass surgery is an incredible skill, right? And then imagine you don't have the tools. You know, you got to do it with a pair of pliers and a steak knife. You're fucked, you know? So it depends on what your priority is. Is your priority to accumulate useless knowledge? Well, rather, not useless knowledge per se. Not saying it doesn't have any value at all. Learning stuff is always good because it gives you a bit more perspective. But I'm talking about the real value of it, and the only real value of it is being able to apply it in your own life. So when I go around seeing people give these motivational speeches and inspirational talks and what have you, it reminds me of the fact that the people who are giving those motivational speeches know what the hell they're talking about, because they've more or less applied the exact same formula in their own life. And it's worked out very well for them. The problem that I have with that approach, though, on the other hand, is that not everybody's the same. Not the same approach works for everybody. That's why I don't like giving people advice, because it makes it appear as though that I know what I'm talking about when it comes to their life. And I think that's really stupid. That's kind of why I don't agree with the political system. Because it just means that the 50% of stupid people in the country decide what the other 50% of stupid people do with their life. It seems freaking ridiculous. I don't want to be ruled by anybody. I don't like people coming into my life unless I allow them. you know, I've got my space, I've got my my walls, I've got my privacy, allegedly. No, actually not even allegedly. There's nothing private anymore, really. I mean, the only difference is the effect of your privacy violation. For example, if they start gang stalking you, and you've actually got people following you and stuff like that, and they've only just got a three-man team, it doesn't actually cost them much. They can just hire criminals and things like that off the street, pay them $20 an hour, buy them lunch and give them a rental car, that kind of thing. Cheap as chips, bro. Gang stalking's not actually that hard to coordinate either. Isn't that amazing? You can totally destroy someone's life for, I don't know, a couple hundred bucks a day. Maybe $1,000 a day. Scare the hell out of them. At all times. None of that has happened to me. And none of it happens to a lot of people. And I think everybody's got this paranoia. Maybe that's it. Isn't it? Maybe that's the reason why half of us don't actually get off our ass and do our dream. Is because we're paranoid about it. You know, we think too much about the consequences. We look before we leap. And the thing is, you're supposed to look before you leap, but that doesn't mean you just look and don't leap at all, ever. Because that's kind of counterproductive. Rather unproductive, should I say. We're paralyzed by our paranoia. Is that what paranoia means? Like a paralysis of the mind? A perpetual fear of almost everything? That's half of what knowing about conspiracy stuff and alternative health and electromagnetic radiation and everything is all about. It's about making you paranoid, but paranoid for a very good reason. Because your food supply is poisoned, your water supply, your air supply, and almost everything that you use on a daily basis is electric and is poisonous for you as well, and cooks your cells. Even if you can't feel it. You know, there's only like, what, 3-6% of people who are electrosensitive. I know a number of them. And if they come into town or something like that, they just can't handle the cell phone towers. Like, they actually feel it. Now, for those of us who can't feel it, don't worry. They've tested the cells of people who are electrosensitive and people who are not. And they found that the cells are affected the exact same way by the radiation. Thank you. Even if you can't feel it, your cells do. All of them. It does a lot of damage. And there is no escape. Not really. People say, oh, you can go farming or whatever. It's like, does that mean that the only thing that you can do if you're electrosensitive is become a farmer? Go live out in the middle of nowhere? You can't participate in society really anymore? You know? This is insane. But cleverly, they're also now pulling out the Rural Wi-Fi Initiative to bring wireless free internet to rural areas. So even if you did become a farmer because you're electrosensitive to get away from all that stuff, you couldn't. Coming to a farm near you, a gargantuan wireless radiation emitter that will give you free internet and access to the world that you had to leave behind because it had too many wireless radiation emitters in it. Oh, God. Is the situation hopeless? I personally think so, you know. But I'm very cynical. And I think the cynicism is more or less a survival mechanism, because I just look at it and go, okay, you know what? I'm just going to expect the worst and hope for the best. You know? Maybe I just contradicted myself. Maybe that means I do actually have hope, don't I? Damn it. I've been denying the fact for such a long time because I've known that, Morgan Freeman said in The Shawshank Redemption, "Let me tell you something, my friend. Hope is a dangerous thing. Hope will drive a man insane. It's so true, man. Like, I had so much hope for being a 9/11 truther, and so much hope for being a talk radio show host, and so much hope for this, that, and the other. And the reality never lives up to the expectation of your dreams. So I've learned to dream small, but act like I'm dreaming big. You know, just kind of operate under some kind of cosmic irony pretense, just in case things get a little bit boring. Without question, life is a struggle. And I know that because the most valuable questions in my life have been the ones that have cost me the most. It's an immutable truth, isn't it? All the pains and the suffering and the trauma and the scumbaggery and all the depressing thoughts that cycle around in your mind when you know that there's ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery cockfag bankers that are fucking everything up. You know, it's a really, it's like, oh, well, I guess, how am I going to plan for my future? Oh my God, you know what it is? It's like preparing to go to court to get charged with a crime in a perpetual way. All right, your life goes on hold. You can't really make any plans, and you're constantly beset by anxiety. That's what being, taken to court and for a criminal charge felt like for me. And I've only just realized this right now on the radio that that's exactly, in a small way, what knowing about conspiracy and what's really going on does to you. And that constant anxiety and inability to plan for the future and things like that. People saying there's this end of the world, that end of the fucking world, all the time, aren't they? It's the financial collapse that'll get us. No, it's the climate change that'll get us. No, it's the vaccine bioweapons that'll get us. No, it's the aerosol bioweapons that'll get us. No, it's the chemtrails that'll get us. No, it's the super volcanoes that'll get us. No, it's actually the weather weapons that'll get us, bro, and the earthquake machines. Nah, bro, they're gonna hit us with scalar wave weapons. Nah, bro, they're gonna just lock down in a police state and they're gonna guillotine everybody. Nah, bro. They're just going to shoot everybody and they're going to execute people in the streets and drag you out of your house kicking and screaming and shoot you in the head in front of your kids on your knees with your hands bound behind your back. How do you deal with such a cacophony of fucking fear mongering? I mean, God damn it. Everybody freaking out about all of this, that, and the other. That's why I don't even follow the alternative media anymore. That's freaking stressful. It's a pain in the ass. And it doesn't make any sense. What the fuck is the point? Again, knowledge. Knowledge has no value unless you apply it. All right, so listen to this. There was a hoax shooting. All right, doesn't matter which shooting it is. Doesn't matter which hoax it is. As far as I'm concerned, most of them are hoaxes anyway, or some kind of attempt to hide SSRI drug reactions or something like that. Okay, so you know about this. Cool. What changed in your life? You specifically. You've heard about this latest shooting hoax. This latest patsy. This latest false flag. Do you change as a person? Do you learn anything that you couldn't have really known by direct cynical assumption alone? Do you really care for that individual or those group of people that got killed? Do you feel an emotional connection or response? It doesn't matter whether you're watching the mainstream or the alternative media. The knowledge doesn't really have any value because you can't apply it in your own life, even if you wanted to. That's why I do the show the way that it is. It's free flow. It's meant to be fun, but insightful and, deep thinking. And the reason for this is specifically because nobody else is doing it. Okay, you might think of other people like, I don't know, Howard Stern or Jon Stewart, but they don't interview people like I can. They can't. Sometimes I'm helping to direct a very inexperienced guest in a conversation. I might be talking a little bit more. And sometimes I might just be basically muting my microphone for the bulk of a 55-minute segment, because the guest that I have is on a roll, and I can't really contribute anything better than they're providing you, the audience. They're expanding on their thoughts. They're really getting somewhere. And I don't interrupt them when they're in those places. Sometimes I offer an interjection or some kind of a terrible joke, just to keep the mood light and to remind the guests that I'm still there, you know. I'm right here listening with you, buddy. And my friend Mike told me something. He listened to every Thomas Sheridan video interview that he could find on YouTube. Every single one that he could find. And there's a lot of them. A lot of them. And then he watched my interview with him last. And he said, "Vinny, it's not because you're my friend or anything. It's not because I know you. But out of all the people that interviewed Thomas Sheridan, you're the best. Like, the best interviewer in the world." And I'm like, yeah, I kind of am. I know that sounds real arrogant, but just like Muhammad Ali said he was the greatest, I'm basically the best interviewer in the world. I challenge you. Find any interview with any great person that you can find on Coast to Coast or Howard Stern or Jon Stewart or whatever that I've interviewed, okay? Just Google the names. Watch those interviews. Time after time, the Vinny Eastwood Show comes out on top. Here's why. My guests do not need to worry at all. They will never need to defend themselves at all. They will never feel uncomfortable. They will never feel under pressure. They will never feel like they're under attack. Never. Not once have I done that on this show. And I never will. Because it doesn't matter who you're interviewing, even if you're interviewing a bad person. Sometimes if you're nice, if you're really charming, if you give them the space that they need, if you have a skill at giving people comfort by allowing them to be open and allowing them to realize that everything they do will be accepted without question, just... I'm just hearing you out, bro. I'm not going to, you know, confirm or deny or conflate or anything. I'm going to look for the issues that I do agree with you on, and I'll comment on those. Because it's on the points we agree that we should come together and collaborate, and the points that we disagree, we can leave those to another time. Preferably a time when we're not enslaved and under the threat of extermination by ruthless criminal sociopathic bankster cockfags. You know, am I being unreasonable here? Let's get along until such a point as somebody commits some form of scumbaggery and then boom, they're out. You know, that's my rule, bro. If you act like a scumbag, you ain't coming back into the show. Ever. If you want to bring confrontationalism on the show, sorry, bro, you won't be invited back. You know, you can have your appearance. Everybody gets one. You know? But there have been a lot of people on that have come on this broadcast that have, you know, big names, who've had extraordinary interviews. Like, in some cases, their most highly viewed interviews. In some cases, they've commented that it was the best interview that they've ever had. And I get that a lot from my guests. And then for some reason, at some point, you know, they turn. They get angry with me about something. they get really upset. They become, I don't know if it's ego. I just think it's damage. All people who are brilliant that I've met, truly brilliant, are damaged in some way. And it shows. So the reason why they've had to become so brilliant is because they've had that much damage in their life done to them. What is done to you creates you, it shapes you, it molds you. And sometimes we have memories of times where somebody, just like the person in front of us right now, or somebody who said exactly what the person in front of me is saying right now, you have those memories of those bad people doing those same things. And you could have somebody who's completely innocent and actually not being a dick at all, saying that exact same words or just reminding you very heavily of that previous incident. And instead of hearing them out and having them have their say or whatever, you get really aggressive with them, treat them as though you're attacking them, as though you're the enemy, and then they block you, or so they don't want to talk to you again, or they threaten you, or they stalk you, or something like that, you know? Now, some of those people aren't psychopaths. I'm pretty sure of this, that there's been some people on the show that have thrown fits with me for no effing reason, who are completely normal, good, decent people, who just are under a lot of stress and have had some bad stuff happen to them, and that stuff comes up again. You know, they're not all just kind of like carte blanche, you know, I'm just going to throw everybody out who I don't like, who treats me like a dick or something like that, as a psychopath, and just classify them, chuck them into a fucking box. No. That's the wrong way of going about it, I think. I mean, the reason why I think it's the wrong way of going about it is it doesn't benefit anybody to be aggressive. I've noticed that my whole life. Every time I've taken my aggression control off, dude, you don't want to see me. I mean, picture this. 6'4", 120 kilos, with the biggest set of lungs and the loudest voice you can imagine. It's scary as hell just to see it. Even if it's not directed at you, if it's directed at somebody else and you're just watching this happen. And I wonder sometimes if that's the real me that I'm suppressing there. If I actually am violent, aggressive, and abusive by nature. Or I wonder if that's simply the dark side that is reserved, and we all need that dark side reserved for occasions where there is actually a viable use for it. Okay, somebody's trying to hurt a child. You see me coming running at you, you're going to run the hell away. See, there you go. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're a bad person if you feel angry or you want to be violent or something like that. It's a natural urge, I think. It's just some of us can be a lot more aggressive and a lot more violent than others. And can be a lot more intimidating and a lot more scary. And I think this is the reason why I suppress and just hold down that, but and push it down as much as I can, mask it with humor, be creative and try to love people and help people and do positive work and that kind of thing. It's actually a big effort to resist being a bully, you know? I was thinking about my friend Jason today, and I knew Jason back in the day when we were in high school, and I used to bully him really badly. And I met his dad one time a few years after high school at the Red Cross, and I asked him to tell Jason for me that I was really sorry that I was acting really terribly and there was a lot of bad stuff going on in my own life that I wasn't dealing with at the time, and I was really mean and cruel to him. I made his life a living hell, and I wanted to tell him that I was very sorry. And his dad never passed on the message. I know, because there was this one time I was on the boat going to Waiheke, and there he was. And so I sat down next to him, and I did apologize. And he's got a wife, he's got a kid on the way, he's just made a down payment on his first house, and life is good for him. And I'm really glad of that. I mean, I'm not sure how selfish the attempt was to get some kind of forgiveness or some kind of recompense for what a dick I'd been. All I knew is I felt bad about it, and I needed to apologize for it. I needed to get it off my chest. And there's quite a lot of those things, and I think we've all got those little instances in our lives. Not necessarily where you're being the bad person, but something where maybe you did something a little bit foolish. And you scared somebody, or you somebody got injured, or somebody got killed or something. You know? And you carry that with you your whole life. Don't you? Until such a time as you get over it, whenever you've got some peace and quiet to yourself, and you're just standing there, and it's like, ah, this is nice and relaxing. Ah, God! Ah! You know, you have this you have this memory flashback, this subconscious, like, puts two and two together and just brings back that painful little memory, and you have to yell to get it out of your head. Ah! I get it all the time. All the time. And some of them are new. It's like, oh man, I haven't regretted that part of my life before. You know, it's just this constant struggle. You feel like you're on some kind of a psychological dragnet that's been purposely put in place to destroy everything about your brain. You're poisoned at all times. You're brainwashed at all times. And if you don't think you're brainwashed, let me ask you something. Have you questioned whether or not you're brainwashed? You never have, yeah. That's how you know you're brainwashed. And even if you say, and even if you start questioning whether or not you're brainwashed, if you're brainwashed, how do you know? Ah, see, there's a question, isn't it? Goes through that whole mind control process of going through school, getting bullied, having basically a stupid system that doesn't work, that isn't meant to work, that has no use in an information age. Maybe in the industrial age, the current schooling system or whatever was a good idea. But in the information age, I think that you can basically abandon almost all schooling institutions. Seriously, what benefit is there for them? You can abandon almost all workplaces as well. Think about this. How much better and more efficiently would society run if we made it a priority to digitize and decentralize a lot of the institutions that we currently rely upon? All right? So let's say, for example, how do you turn a school into an online thing? What benefit does a child have sitting in a classroom when they could just be sitting there watching the teacher on Skype? Be asking and answering questions and things like that, being able to provide links and so on and so forth. Learning how to spell and to read and to write be pretty easy. You just have a webcam and you've got the handwriting and slides and things like that, and you've got everybody at their own little computers with their own little cameras on. They're doing their thing on their pens and papers, so that they've actually got handwriting skills as well as typing and being able to research on the internet. And mate, we could decentralize school almost entirely. You could just go boom, suddenly all the kids are at home. But you can't just have all the kids are at home, because what are the adults going to do? Because the adults have to work. They're not there to take care of them. So this is why you phase out as many jobs as you can as well. And I'm not saying like, oh, let's phase out jobs. What I'm saying is you reposition them so that every single job that can be done from home should be done from home, okay? You got some kind of like tech business or whatever, and you got to actually go out and service power lines manually. Okay, sorry, bro, you actually do have to leave the fucking house. But if it's accounting stuff, if it's politics, or in fact, almost all work could be done via computer from home with a decent internet connection. Okay, I'd probably say, top of my head, at least 40% of the workforce. Imagine what the roads would be like for commuters with 40% less traffic. Imagine what rent would be like for front shop property and things of that nature if there's 40% more openings. Now, people would say, oh, this would destroy the economy, destroy the prices. Well, actually, bro, what it would do is save society. 40% less gas being consumed by commuting. They're both for dropping the kids off. You don't have to give them school lunch money or anything like that. You've got food in the fridge. You can reduce costs by an enormous margin by not having two locations or three locations or four locations that you need to be in order to simply survive on a day-to-day basis. Okay, you got to go to work, you got to drop the kids off at school. Imagine you take those two important equations out of almost the entirety of society. How many problems would we have? You know, how many people would be getting road rage when you just like straight through? It'd be like the Autobahn. I think that this is a good idea, but that's just because I've made it work for me. It might not work for everybody, and I think, of course, human interaction and actual socializing and things like that need to be part of your regular life. But the problem is, when you get people into a central command structure like a classroom with a teacher in the head of it, that's not fun. It's hardly even interactive. You know, just get bored as hell. There's problems, and we can solve them. You know, that's all I'll say. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Please, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to ask you very kindly and very nicely and very sincerely, for every hour of this show that you have endured over the years, think about how much it's worth to you and go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and start up a $5 a month donation today if it feels like it's worth that much to you. There's other options as well, but we do need your regular support here in order to keep giving you that regular entertainment and that relief of your frustrations. We'll be right back. Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because you're being exterminated doesn't mean you can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? We're on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 4 days a week. And I also get broadcast around New Zealand on Rush FM and iFinity FM. And there's also another of other internet-based radio stations that you can listen to the show on live on the affiliates page of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. .com. Now, the Auckland Rates Revolt protest that was led by Stephen Berry and Penny Bright, respectively, organised by them anyway. Now, I'm just going to read out something that I put up on Facebook, and I want to expand on this local government thing, because it's all ties into Agenda 21. None of the speakers actually mentioned Agenda 21. Not dissing them or anything like that. I understand you can't talk about Agenda 21, you know, and still remain credible or whatever. You will to me, but not to the vast majority of the voting public, who think that these things are just like flat out conspiracy theories and will just go nah. So, hundreds of millions of local government money wasted, more corruption than you will ever believe, billions of public assets stolen and given to private companies. Len Brown has failed our city and its people in so many ways with such a vast and broad disdain for economic sense and democracy. And that's just for starters. Now, for me, the best speech for the day, just personally, it's my opinion, but was Bruce Rogan. From the Mungify Ratepayers and Residents Association. Great man. The list of things that he read out for what the different channels that you have to go through when you're trying to expose corruption, when you're trying to not pay corrupt rates and things like that. It's extraordinary. Every single political party, every single person in a position of authority. You know, the police said something like, we don't have to... arrest somebody just because there's evidence of a crime, you know, and the council saying it's only illegal once the court says it's illegal, and the ombudsman saying nah, you need to take it up with the auditor general saying nah, you need to take it up with the ombudsman, national party saying nah, we support it anyway, and basically you're a slave, you know. I just endlessly. This backhanded back and forth between different scumbaggery authorities that don't really have any answers and aren't willing to take action to stop corruption. You know why? Because they're effing corrupt. That's what I'm just starting to come to wrap my head around. I mean, I know that sounds like we know that for a second. No, but I'm just saying, like, not only is the system corrupt, but the individuals and everything like that have been corrupted by it. You know? That's a very sad realization, isn't it? I mean, all these people are like, oh, we're going to save the problem. I'm going to vote for Bernie Sanders. I'm going to vote for Ron Paul. I'm going to vote for John Key. I'm going to vote for the Greens. I'm going to vote for the New Zealand First. It really doesn't matter too much. I mean, New Zealand First was the only person to actually take the Mungawhai ratepayers up on their offer to expose the corruption in Northland, but that was only because it was politically convenient for them and they saw the opportunity to get people's support and win a seat in Northland, which they did. You know? Winston's a very shrewd politician, but yeah, you really can't trust anybody who's in a position like that. Even if they're a trustworthy person. You know, that's the sad thing. Because in a dishonest system, you have to become dishonest in order to survive and thrive in that environment. It's kind of like how the corporate ladder works, isn't it? You have to compromise your decisions based upon the rules that you have to follow and the stupid things that you have to do. And that's... I really don't know what to say, because it's so bad to recognize without equivocation and without any wiggle room, you know, no justification. You can just say, like, look, the whole political system's corrupted. Okay, at best it's entertainment value. So vote for whoever gives the bad politicians the funniest insults, you know. Keep things interesting. Who gets thrown out of parliament the most? Who gets ignored and demonized in the media the most? That's the person you vote for. But that's only one vote, and that only takes you a day. You know, if you're in the States, I can't believe this. Like, in New Zealand, it's like so easy to vote that it's unbelievable. You just waltz right in, tell them your name, they find you on the list, and they tick you off, and you go in, you put two ticks on a piece of paper, you chuck it in a ballot box, you're gone. Right. I've seen neighborhoods in the States, you know, just like helicopter footage of people lined up around the block. in order to vote. No wonder barely anybody votes. It's like, oh, great, I'm going to spend like 10 hours waiting in line. And then maybe the vote machines will be rigged anyway. It's kind of demotivating, isn't it? In New Zealand, it's much easier. And still, people don't even bother to do it because there's no real person to vote for. There's no actual options. And G. Edward Griffin from Freedom Force International is talking about this, is that we have to become City Hall, more or less. If you adopt the creed of freedom, if you reject scumbaggery in all its forms, if you refuse to endorse, support, or idly stand by while corrupt, lying, sociopathic scum take control of your city, your county, your state, your country, your world, then you will never be able to forgive yourself. And the time is now, isn't it? Because you see, the success Ron Paul was getting in straw polls and things like that during the last US election about being the preferred president, he'd get like number two for the Republican list, or in some cases number one. But they'd cut it completely out of the media because they didn't want him to be mentioned at all. And it seems like, oh, it's hopeless, the mainstream media won't support us. No. You can't guarantee that fighting for freedom is going to secure that freedom for you. But you can guarantee that if you do nothing, you won't get it. Just don't do nothing. Are there people in New Zealand, in the United States, ordinary people, but are, shall we say, a little bit brighter and a little bit more well-spoken than the average person, who are really capable of explaining things quite well, and do have a proficient work ethic, but do not want the responsibility of actually being in government? And I thought about the idea of a different political party called the Independence Party. Independence with a T. And what you do is you create one party out of completely disparate independent candidates who all represent completely different things all over the country. And the condition of being in the party is that you don't stake your reputation on the party, you don't support everybody else in the party, you're only simply using it as a vehicle so that you can get a platform and a group vote, kind of like pooling your resources. Because the way I've seen this work with activists has been very effective. Even Graham McCready, who's a advocate in the courts, I think, and Penny Bright and Russell Malcolm. Penny Bright's a activist and a bush lawyer, and Russell Malcolm used to run a successful real estate business, and he exposed the fact that there was John Key actually in charge of his investigation, or rather, that's the wrong way to put it, isn't it? Rather, when he got arrested, it was John Key who dictated his bail conditions, including you can't contact MPs. And they were exposing enormous quantities of corruption, just these three people. And there were others. I'm not sure which ones exactly, so I don't want to disparage or not give credit where credit's due. If I knew who they were, I'd be saying their names too. But just them. Those three very diligent people. Penny does more work reading documents and doing things in a proper way than anybody I've ever seen, especially in activism here in New Zealand. And Russell had a 56-page dossier that I got to read out to a camera about the corruption scandal that he was exposing at the local council where he was. And that's the reason why he got arrested and had his bail conditions dictated by John Key, because it was a very politically sensitive time to expose massive corruption at the councils at the same time that the government's trying to amalgamate all the councils and saying they're not going to be corrupt. Mm-hmm. Right in the middle of the election. So we have political censorship. We have people in the who are critical of John Key experiencing job losses and things of that nature. God damn, this country is becoming so tyrannical. And it frustrates me principally because the majority of people who are watching television don't know about it, don't believe it. But when you take polls, on the other hand, on the internet, it tells a completely different story. And this is what I've started to realize, is that the media doesn't actually reflect public consciousness. It only reflects the corporate consciousness. The media aren't telling you what the people are actually thinking. They're only telling you what about 30% of the public will believe without question. I mean, the rest of the 70% of the public probably don't believe them very much. Okay? They're lying. They don't have the reach that they think that they do. They don't have the money that you think that they do. They're broke. They've got bugger all people listening to them or watching them, considering the amount of money that they're putting in to their broadcasting apparatus. Whereas me, I've just been working for 8 years solid just on word of mouth. I haven't paid a dollar for advertising or a dollar for anything that I couldn't really justify the expense on. So all I have is basically equipment in my life, and that's all I really need in order to do the job. Well, and the internet, of course. And I think that the reason why truthers get so frustrated is because they think that people believe the media. People don't. A lot of people do not, right? But the problem is they don't have any alternative to the lie, because you're not telling them about the Vinnie Eastwood show. You're not, are you? Well, some of you aren't, but I remember... There are people out there who really don't like me, and I can understand that, because they're dicks. And, like, what was this? Somebody said, fuck Vinnie Eastwood, you know? And it's like, bro, come on. I'm not doing anything wrong. Not even doing anything bad. Could be even interpreted as bad. You just don't like it that there's a different voice out there to the one that you've believed all these years. You don't like it that it's got longevity. You don't like it that it's working so hard to stay alive and to keep producing content and keep supporting the activists and all the commentators that get censored from the mainstream media. You don't like that I'm under my own steam, that I don't have anybody telling me to do this. I don't have anybody forcing me to do this. I only have people helping me to do this. I get help from you, the listeners. I can't express. All right, let me dig this. I had one of the highest vocabulary scores in the standardized testing in my entire high school, right? I think it was like the third most. And what happened after that, I became a telesalesman, and I learned to talk people into things, right? Not by lying to them, not by distorting facts or anything like that, but by simply smoothly presenting my case, right? Had a 50% strike rate. Was that good at explaining things, that good at finding the right words. I can't find the words to express my gratitude to every single person who donates to this show. I can't, for the life of me, do it. Because the words fall short. There is not a language for which it can be expressed. It's a feeling. Like some kind of feeling of validation. This feeling of this love, this acceptance. And I still can't even describe the feeling fully. That's how it makes me feel. Every time a little automatic payment comes in from somebody, it's like a $1 or $5 or something like that, it all contributes to this feeling that I'm on the right path, that people actually do value this work. They do see it as a service to the community, that they are willing to sacrifice their hard-earned money in order to support on a regular basis. That's just freaking awesome. And I don't feel I'm grateful enough, often enough. Certainly not at all. Everybody wants to be thanked for their contributions, don't they? And there's so many different ways to contribute with this. I'm recruiting people who can audio edit and write out descriptions for shows for me and things like that. It saves me an inordinate amount of time. I'm going to give myself a webmaster and producers and marketers and things like that. I want to have people help me to go out and pitch and get the show sponsors or do campaigns to get more subscribers regularly donating, do fundraising projects in order to fund the TV show, or actually be able to employ people. Because there's so much work that goes into alternative media that ultimately there's not enough money. You know? Nobody would get this job if they weren't really dedicated, if they weren't really passionate about it. Because the amount of hours you have to work in order for such a small reward. I mean, really? That's why I laugh my ass off when people claim that I'm doing this for the money. It's like, bro. When I go to bars, people buy me beers. Alright? For two reasons. Number one, I'm Vinny Eastwood and they want to buy me a beer. Number two, I can't afford to buy myself a beer. You know, it's a funny old world, isn't it? Almost everything that you need turns up for you when you need it. But it doesn't give you more than you need it at any one time. And I think that's what greed has done to people, is they haven't learned to find that kind of wavelength that they can just be on and just exist, just on that fine line, by doing exactly what they want to do, how and the way that they want to do it. You know, by believing in themselves and whatnot. I don't want to sound preachy, but it sounds like Fight Club to me. I've seen in Fight Club the strongest and the smartest men who have ever lived. I see so much potential, and I see it squandered. God damn it, an entire generation pumping gas, waiting tables, slaves with white collars. Our generation has no great war, no great depression. Our great war is a spiritual war. Our great depression is our lives. We've all been raised on television to believe that one day we'd be movie gods and rock stars, but we won't. And we're slowly learning that fact. And we're very, very pissed off. You feel that? That resonating anger, that acceptance, that realization of the situation? Don't ignore it. It's trying to tell you something. It's trying to motivate you to change. You cannot change the world unless you first change yourself. And changing yourself means to destroy yourself in a lot of cases. You cannot build sometimes without destroying what was once there. Taking an old rust bucket of a car and creating something completely new out of it by shredding it and building it from scratch. That's what it really means to make a creation. And you are a being of creation. with infinite capacities. Abilities you wouldn't even believe that you have. And a destiny that you deny the existence of. Because such is its obligation, that is too much for you to take, isn't it? The world on your shoulders, humanity's existence on a knife edge, a million threats to our existence, our consciousness, our intelligence, our virility getting turned into sterility, our creativity being turned into mundanity, our sanity being turned into craziness, our love being turned into hate. All the things that we value and hold dear, all those things that truly make us up, are being twisted and distorted ever so slightly, so that we start to believe that our own existence is the exact opposite of what it is. We're not here to be fucking consumers. We're here to fucking create. You say there's a million problems? Fuck, mate. Sounds like you could be able to come up with a million solutions then. Isn't it? You got a problem with that? Of course you do. You can't solve all the million problems of the world by yourself, can you? You'd be insane to try. But sometimes it's those crazy people who think that they can change the world who are the ones who actually do. You know, don't give up. Don't lose hope. Don't be like me and just be so cynical and just, you know, afraid that you're going to be killed one day. Nobody will even hear you again and all your stuff will get deleted offline because of unpaid bills and humanity lives in a dark age. Don't become like me. Become like you. It's the only one you can do. It's the only way you can be. And you'll only do it once you truly believe that. That there's only one way you can be. Your way to be. That is the kind of power that they want to rob us of. My God, man. Just the small efforts of singular activists and things of that nature have set back the criminals in this country decades. Although the scumbaggery keeps growing, it keeps being pushed back. Little by little in little places. Many people hacking at the branches, and a few of them cutting down the roots, getting underneath that tree of scumbaggery, pouring some poison in there, and destroying it, slowly, but surely. It'll wither, and it will die. And from its last seed of scumbaggery fruit, will bloom a tree of liberty. One that we can take shelter from the brutal, harsh rays of oppression in the shade of freedom. To keep us cool and keep us calm and keep us healthy. Keep us thinking. Keep us caring. Keep us creating. Not by telling us to do it, but by showing us that we can do it ourselves, and we don't need a government to tell us what to do. We don't need a schooling system to tell us what to think. We don't need a media to tell us what to pay attention on. We can find out for ourselves, if only you would give us the opportunity. It's the direct opposite of what's happening in the government, isn't it? Every single one of your choices is being systematically taken away. Can't do this, can't do that, can't do that. You know what they call Catholic nuns, nuns? It's because they can have none of this, none of that, none of that. And that's how we've been treated, isn't it? being treated like children, like devotees to some kind of selfish greed cult. One that thrives on violence, mistrust, and deception. One that has no interest in the common good, no interest in reaching greater human potential, only seeking to suppress it, only seeking to dumb it down, only to restrict it and to control it, to turn an organic creature into a machine. Something that's predictable, with parts that wear out that can be replaced. Something flawed. Something built with planned obsolescence. You know, people think it's only products that are made obsolete by design. So are we. And we're becoming more obsolete by the day. A lot of people, aren't they? Can't you see it? I mean, I wonder how many people get bowled over by cars because they're crossing the street looking at their fucking cell phone. You know, natural selection. Thank you. Now, it's quite funny and ironic, wasn't it? Because for a longest time, I figured the reason that stupid people will keep surviving is because there is no natural selection anymore. You know? It was usually the dumb gazelle and the stupid zebras who got eaten. You know? The slow lumbering ones. But we've got no predators like that that just take you out. No. It's kind of more like on that movie Daybreakers, where they capture you and they farm the blood out of you, sort of thing. You know, we're just slaves, and they want us to be kept alive and happy. They've decided to try and create this equilibrium, you know, between having humans who are alive and making sure that their life is restricted in such a way that they don't become fully awakened. You know, you're alive, but you're not really alive. Like an afterlife. Like the living dead. Like having no feeling, no sensation. No revelation in your thought processes. No evolution in your thoughts about the world. And your place in it. Or even if you have a place in it. I've always struggled with whether or not I have justification for my existence, you know? And so I've taken steps in order to ensure that my existence at least has justification for me. You know, exposing scumbaggery, helping humanity, I think it justifies my existence. Other people might say that they're taking care of their kids justifies their existence. I think that does. You know? Anybody who's doing anything that isn't in support of the New World Order agenda, who isn't abandoning humanity to die in an eternal winter of horror and fear, is doing enough. Are you supporting this show? You donating? You're doing enough. Are you sharing around emails about really important topics and things that need to be addressed? That have successful consequences and petitions and things of that nature, you're doing enough. If you're not doing nothing, you're doing enough. And so many people like just they don't think that that's enough, right? Voting's definitely not enough. It has to be kind of full time to a degree, isn't it? And it's quite easy for involvement in conspiracy and scumbaggery to become sort of full-time, because it's every day. It's all around you. It's constant. Every time you're talking to somebody, you could be talking about it. Every time you're on a phone call, every time you're in a text message, every time you're getting something at the supermarket, hey, you probably better not touch those labels on the receipts there. They've got ink that has bisphenol alanine in it. They're like, what's bisphenol alanine? Well, I'm glad you asked. It's actually BPA, that kind of thing, and it is an estrogen mimicker. So what it does over a long period of time, if you keep touching it and being exposed to it, and it's in all plastics and all inks, pretty much, it'll, over time, if you're a woman, it might give you breast cancer. If you're a man, it might turn you into a girly boy. And don't think that just because there's BPA-free products out there that they're safe, because the products that they put in the plastic instead of the BPA is even worse for you than the BPA. Oh, God, weed needs to be legal. And hemp. Especially the hemp. God! 50,000 freaking industrial uses, bro. Okay. You want plastic that isn't poisonous? They've got frickin' hemp plastic, bro. Non-toxic. Biodegradable. Problem? Got plastic bags, pollution, trash, everything like that? You can make every goddamn product that is sealed in hemp plastic or hemp fibers or a hemp box or whatever the hell. You can make everything out of it, and it'll be completely biodegradable. You got a problem with waste? You got a problem with trash? You got a problem with any of this other shit? Solved! Fucking solved! In New Zealand, we've got this one tiny little chunk of the North Island that sticks out like a pair of dog's balls. It's called Taranaki. And it's got this enormous mountain on it. And just that little section that sticks out of the side of the country, it was said that if you planted half of that with hemp, the entire country's biofuel needs and fuel needs in general would be done. Thank you. So there's all your fuel. There's all your plastics and everything. And then we have a completely sustainable consumer culture till the end of time that can continually renew itself and be grown 3 times a year. And make almost every product that you could ever imagine out of it. Dude. You want to know why it's illegal? Because doing the right thing is always illegal. Always. Doing the bad thing, sometimes it's illegal. Sometimes it gets legalized. Retroactively, in fact. So let's think about this. I think Jack Harrell was right. Hemp can save the world. Like, it'd play the most massive role in saving the world. Now, there's a hell of a lot of more bigger problems that we've got to worry about than trash and consumer products being safe for human consumption and things of that nature. But this is one very, very, very important thing. Okay, let's replace almost the entirety of mining, forestry, and a number of other really damaging industries with hemp production instead. Okay, just re-divest, bro. Okay, the government will buy all your forestry lands and everything back off you, and we'll just leave it there. We'll turn it into a frickin' national park that people can wander through and wildlife can flourish in. You know, it'll be nice. It'll be good. It'll be for everybody. And you will still be able to make plenty of business. Except now your business is growing hemp and providing products for humanity that don't destroy humanity in the process. You know? Sound like a reasonable idea? Does to me. Of course, I'm not a criminal psychopath. With billions of dollars that I've been hoarding away for several generations. By subverting almost everything that's good for humanity. And let's think about, of course, the medical benefits of this. Judging by the Rick Simpson oil method, which is getting rid of lesions and cancers of all types and is a virtual panacea, you know, whatever you got, chances are pretty good that this hemp oil will solve it. And, of course, that's illegal. And, of course, when you go to the Cancer Society, they say, we're not looking for the cure for cancer. I mean, mate, we'll be out of the job. We'd stop getting people's donations for this research that we're doing that doesn't yield any fucking results. Ever. And we wouldn't be able to give 96% of the money collected to ourselves and only 4% to the victims of cancer that we allegedly represent. Yeah. It reminds me of something Stephen Hughes said. He was like very critical of these big charities, and it's like, oh, no, don't give your money to somebody. Give it to us. We'll make sure it gets used appropriately. It's like, no, mate. I'm going to give my $3 to this guy. To this guy right here who has 3 socks and no shoes. And she's like, oh, but they'll just spend it on drugs and alcohol. What do you think I was going to spend it on? You know? You can make that kind of like little difference in your own life. I mean, me personally, I don't know why I do it. I've maybe been making an admission here or something, but I don't give homeless people money generally. But that's because I'm in poverty myself, you know? It's not really a good move for people who are in poverty to share money that they don't have with other people who are in worse poverty. You know? There's no volunteerism. You can't stem the tide. And a lot of these people are damaged, right? I remember seeing a lot of videos of people who are homeless who've been kidnapped by child protective services and sexually abused and things like this, and they of course develop eating disorders or alcohol problems or mental disorders or things like that because of the things that were being done to them, and now they're on the streets and now people don't care about them and they try to walk past them without looking at them, without giving them any money, like I do. See? That's how you know I'm not playing you. That's how you know I'm not bullshitting you about stuff. It's because I'll admit some really nasty things that I do. And the reason I feel that I can justify it is, A1, I don't really have any money anyway. And B2, I feel that what I'm doing in terms of trying to help activists who are also in poverty is my contribution in that area, helping people who are in poverty. I spend countless hours editing those videos and shooting them and interviewing these people and making sure that those things get published and what have you in order to do it. Now, maybe it's cruel or something like that, but I do know that there's plenty of other people who do give money to the homeless even though they're real short on change themselves. I've got no problem with that whatsoever. Wouldn't tell anybody presumed to do with their own money, with their own conscience, that kind of thing. But I just don't, and I don't really have any other justification for it. It's not like, oh, they're bums, they're just going to spend it on alcohol. I don't really care what they'd spend their money on. If I had plenty of money, I mean, I actually probably would give them some, but because I'm on a limited budget, no, it just doesn't even enter into my head. It's like, sorry, bro, I really can't. And there's a number of homeless activism. In fact, hey, that's a good idea. This is a good discussion topic, isn't it? Homelessness. How to help the homeless. Not what to do about the homeless, because that sounds like some fucking fascist final solution type thing. But how to help them. What do they need? What has happened to them? What measures need to be taken in order to help them heal and come back to us? Can they come back to us? I mean, I see them everywhere now. Every time I go to any main street in town, there they are. You know, I've never seen that before. Not in this city. Not in this country. It doesn't gel right with me, bro. And it's not so much the poverty that's causing it. Of course, that's one causal factor. Saw a really sad news story about an elderly man who'd been paying taxes all his life, and then he missed one mortgage payment, and they took his house, and now he's living in his car on his pension. You know, how horrible is that for the banks to do that to people? Maybe that's the real crux of the issue here. Is there a direct correlation between banking and homelessness? I mean, sure, we can make campaigns about feeding the homeless and doing that kind of thing, and in some places in America, they've made feeding the homeless effing illegal. The cruelty. The scumbaggery of wanting to do that. To literally charge somebody with a crime. The crime of feeding a human being who hasn't got any food. The crime of helping someone who doesn't have any help. The crime of caring about people who don't have anybody to care about them. That's how you know that the society is run by psychopathic criminals. Because to expose psychopaths and to expose criminals is illegal. To help good people, ordinary people, doesn't matter. It's illegal. I'm not saying like carte blanche, oh, it's illegal to help people. But you see what I'm getting at. Slowly, but surely. Being good is going to be made illegal. Being obedient and doing bad things in a passive way will be more or less the only action that you've got left to take without breaking the law. You know, I'm really into sci-fi movies and things like that. I don't know why. I like to fantasize about the end of the world and these post-dystopian things and these technocratic societies that get built up and these alien invading cultures that enslave people and annihilate entire planets like locusts. Maybe it's because I feel that they're an accurate allegory of what's happening to me. To us. In an allegorical way. And that's what I see when I look out my window, when I use my imagination. I kind of see like a really fast-moving video. And I see you know when you see those kind of nature things, how you see a dog's carcass or something like that. Decompose really quickly in a video kind of thing, and all the maggots come out and all of that sort of thing. You know, but when I look out my window, when I look at the streets, I see them in fast motion as well, but I just see them getting worse. I see them getting dirtier, meaner, crueler. I see them getting so much worse. I see all these slave block apartments going up. I see all these people walking around with their faces buried in their microphones, in their cell phones with microchips implanted in their heads, interfacing with them and having scanned ID tags and things like that everywhere they go that scan them for biometric imprint, which can be read from space. I see all the highways going up. I see all the sides of them being corralled up. I see fences being put around natural blocks of land and big signs being posted that says off limits to human activity. I see the buildings of our old leaders and people who stood against tyranny and people who died in wars being dismantled and destroyed and deconstructed to make us forget about our past. I see the museums being raided for any kind of artifact that can be found that clues us into the past and how great we used to be and the civilizations that we used to have. I see railroad tracks being paved throughout the land, and I see giant bicycle lane tracks going around every single road. I see nobody having their own car anymore. I see nobody free to travel anymore. I see checkpoints being put up everywhere where you have to show your ID to a camera that scans your face as well as your ID to make sure that they measure up predictably. I see people getting up in the morning and I see them having nothing to eat, nothing to drink, but poison, but sugar and salt and fat. I see their brains melting away, becoming so stupid, so out of touch with who they really are, that they can barely even be called human. A slave class of humanity. And I see it happening in front of me in slow motion, while my imagination sees it already happening and being real. And it terrifies me. I mean, I'm not doing this job because I'm brave. No. I'm doing it because I'm absolutely terrified of what I see in front of me. Absolutely petrified of it. I'm afraid of everything. But I know that if I don't do something, anything, I'll never be able to live with that fear. You know, at the moment I seem to be coping with it to a degree, only because I'm doing something about it. It's extremely unfortunate because I'd like to live a life free of pain and fear. And the worst part about that is I know that a pain and fear-free life means a life without any real development. You know, you can't. It's almost like we're hardwired. It's very difficult to learn very well without those things. Sure, you can get something going if you be all airy-fairy about it and try to place faith in some kind of higher power that may or may not exist, or devote yourself to some kind of method of perpetual negotiation with evil, hoping one day you can just pretend that it goes away entirely and will never bother you again. But it will. It will. How can we sit here in the light of discovery? All the things that are being reported about and all this news that I don't watch, it's undoubtedly creating a whole lot of incredibly awesome stuff, right? Exciting things. And it's wonderful, but we don't see it. I have absolute faith that all the people who listen to this show and continue to listen to this show will probably remain good people just like me, because you'll be reminded constantly by listening to the guests what good people sound like, what honest people sound like, what cool people sound like, the kind of people you want to hang out with, have a drink with, or whatever your poison is. I love being around other people like me. Absolutely love it. It feels so good, man. And I'm very grateful, in particular to my two little helpers who've been giving me a hand for the radio broadcasts and stuff like that. They've really been kind of working quite hard on this one and getting a little bit of the work done. And I'm greatly appreciative, because it means I don't have to do it. And I've been doing it for years, and it's just exhausting. So I know what it takes out of you. So Judith and Mads have been doing the descriptions and the audio archiving for quite a bit. And, well, about a week or two now, I think. Maybe three, I forget which. But I always remember to thank them for the work that they're doing with me, because I really am so swamped with the things. I just got a message from Christian Van Wyk, who's the producer and the editor of my television show. A lot of people came up and asked me, where's the second episode of the television show. And she's got a message for her, from her today. Apparently she's been to hell and back. And so it's going to be edited and coming up on the television shortly. And I'll be releasing details about that on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. com and also my Vinnie Eastwood Facebook page. Bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, that following me on Facebook, if you have it, is a big advantage, because I'm very, very active on that. I reply to almost every comment and things like that. You really get to talk to me and interact with me, because the shows, generally I don't take callers. It's very, very rare that we would, so you're here to listen to it and to hear other people's different perspectives and things of that nature, rather than participate. And I would like a greater live listening audience. Because I recall there was a day, I believe it was 9/11 2012, where Radio Live, Willie and JT, actually on almost at the same time on the radio as me in local New Zealand time, come to think of it, allowed callers to call in about 9/11. And there were a shockingly large amount of callers that called in on 9/11. You know, and I'd really like that. That'd be good, man, because I'd like to be able to bring people on and just go, hello, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, quickly tell us what you're on about, blah, 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 you know, and be able to actually talk with on air, you, the listeners, and there might be something in that. Because also, sometimes before I got into talk radio, I was calling into talk radio in order to, you know, comment and things like that, and that sort of inspired me to go the whole hog. So it might be good for you to call into the Vinnie Eastwood Show when we start taking callers, because at the moment we're having a big drive to grow the listening audience. The archives are being downloaded off American Freedom Radio more than we've ever seen, but that's difficult, because I'd like to do live broadcasts where we have wonderful listeners that we have calling in, being able to have conversations with you and interact with you on air. That just sounds really wonderful to me, and in order to do that, I need your help to grow the listening audience. That means not just listening to me. That would also mean listening to Chuck O'Chelly, and Suzanne Posel, and the other great radio show hosts that we have on American Freedom Radio. And we're even now introducing Dr. Rima Labo and Dr. Tenpenny, who are two surviving holistic doctors who haven't been assassinated yet, coming to you for a limited time only on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. They also need some help as well. A few hundred dollars will pay the remainder of the bills for this month, and let's keep the network owner out of anxiety, because we do it for love. There's no money in the truth, only money in lies. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for supporting me, for supporting the network. We all appreciate it, and we wouldn't have it any other way than to be serving you in a nice relationship where everybody contributes and nobody's left out. Thank you very much, and we'll see you again sometime at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news.